Chapter 1. Starvation. When my wife and I separated, I moved out of our home and lived alone in a two-bedroom house with a small yard, which I quickly converted into a vegetable garden. Lawyers were hired. The posturing began. A conduit stretched from my wallet to my lawyer. What can you do? Lawyer up or die? Have you ever been mauled by a tiger? That is what I felt like for a long time. Days, weeks, and months passed. I trudged through my gray days, a sleepwalker of shredded meat. The scars went deeper. My soul was in tatters as well. I was committed to a self-imposed exile, not just a physical exile, but a spiritual one as well. I willingly exiled myself to a desert devoid of women. Don't mistake me, please. Simply put, I like women. How can one eschew over half the world? While I am in no way religious, I always felt the writers of Genesis had it right. It is not good for man to be alone. Nonetheless, an invisible carapace surrounded my heart and spirit. No one could enter until I licked my wounds and healed. Chapter 4. La Signora del Metate. Late one evening, after I had returned from a particularly grueling day at the House of Pain, I sat in the kitchen eating leftovers and some pasta dish. I had left the bag of totopos on the table and found myself staring at La Signora del Metate. I was drinking a nice Zinfandel. The Zin settled in over the sauce and the penne. All felt right with the world. I stared at La Signora and said, "Ti quiero, mi amor. Buenas noches." Perhaps it was due to my weariness, the distressing, or the second glass of Zin. I can't say exactly, but I gradually began to slip in a hypnagogic state of mind. As I stared at the lady on the bag, poco a poco consciousness slipped away. Blackness. I woke up suddenly, startled by the buzzing of hundreds of bees, or perhaps cicadas. The kitchen clock read 2:30 a.m. A sudden icy fear pierced me in the solar plexus. I was still half asleep when the lights started shimmering all around the walls of the room. Red, green, yellow, blue. Chromatic sectors swirling around the walls of the kitchen. I guessed there were police cars outside the house. Maybe they had pulled someone over. A glance out the window showed no activity on the street. Then I realized that I was not alone in the kitchen. On the setillo tile floor, no more than a few feet from the table where I had fallen asleep, there she knelt in all her plain, humble, earthly glory. La Signora del Metate. She noticed me at about the same time that I noticed her. She stopped rolling out a tortilla, pulled a long, luscious black lock of her hair from in front of her face, smiled, and said quietly, "Hola, señor." How do I tell you about this bizarre occurrence? Although I had had a couple of glasses of wine, I was miles away from being drunk. I stared at the lovely woman kneeling at her metate. A nimbus of violet mist surrounded her. It extended beyond her to almost the edge of the kitchen table where I sat, astounded and a bit petrified. There she was, mi mujer of the metate. What struck me most was her long, luscious black hair, so shiny it was a kind of blue. Lean with a long skirt and a pink and white cotton blusa, she stared at me with her bright brown eyes. I thought she was a projection of my mind until she blinked. ¿Habla inglés?" I asked her. "Sí, pero I don't know how," she said. What's your name?" I asked. "Me llamo Zia," she answered and started working the masa again. "Zia, don't you think it's strange that you are on my kitchen floor making tortillas?" I asked. "Recuerdo. I remember I was doing just this when I heard Popo start to rumble." She paused at her work and looked away from me. "Popo?" I asked. "Sí, Popocatépetl. I was working at mi metate when I heard a big explosion from the mountain. I looked up and saw a huge cloud rolling down towards our village. Mi madre walked out of the house. Then everything, entonces, no más, all went black. Ahora, estoy aquí. Here I am." "Verdad?" I interjected. "¿Qué año es? What year was this?" "It is, or was, the first day of November, 1947, she said.